ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्लघानिया गुणासुराय भवान भोजयसास्करा सकथां भगिनीं हन्यात् स्त्रियां उद्वाहा पर्वणि। Vasudev said, My dear brother-in-law Kamsa, you are the pride of your family, the Bhoja dynasty, and great heroes praise your qualities. How could such a qualified person as you kill a woman, your own sister, especially on the occasion of her marriage? Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. According to Vedic principles, a Brahmin, an old man, a woman, a child, or a cow cannot be killed under any circumstances. Vasudev stressed that Devaki was not only a woman but a member of Kamsa's family. Because she was now married to Vasudev, she was Parastri, another man's wife. And if such a woman were killed, not only would Kamsa be implicated in sinful activities, but his reputation as king of the Bhoja dynasty would be damaged. Thus, Vasudev tried in many ways to convince Kamsa in order to stop him from killing Devaki. Mrityor janmattavam vira dehena sahajayate ajyavagda sathantheva mrityor vai praninam dhruva. O great hero, one who takes birth is sure to die, for death is born with the body. One may die today or after hundreds of years, but death is sure for every living entity. Report. Vasudev wanted to impress upon Kamsa that although Kamsa feared dying and therefore wanted to kill even a woman, he could not avoid death. Death is sure. Why then should Kamsa do something that would be detrimental to his reputation and that of his family? As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Jatasya hi dhruvo mrityur dhruvam janama mritasya cha tasmad aparihariye rathe natvam sochitamarahasi. For one who has taken birth, death is certain, and for one who is dead, birth is certain. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament. One should not fear death. Rather, one should prepare oneself for the next birth. One should utilize one's time in this human form to end the process of birth and death. It is not that to save oneself from death, one should entangle oneself in sinful activities. This is not good. Om Agyan Timidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guru Bhaimama. Section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find to what extent a person too much attached to this body and senses can go to protect his own self-interest. And what we find here in the life of Kamsa, we find taking place practically every day to some degree throughout the world. what people are willing to do simply for the immediate pleasures of their body and senses. What people can do in their own self-interest. Kamsa here, it is described. Although he was very affectionately taking his sister on his own chariot as an act of love, really, did he ever love his sister? People are very attached to their families in the name of love. But the question is there really love there? The question is, if you weren't in my family, would I still love you? Why do we love a person? Is it because of our selfless motivation to please that person, to serve that person? Or is it because there's a certain prestige or a certain sense enjoyment that I derive because of the conception that you are mine, you are of me? See, this sense gratification expands. Srila Prabhupada explains that the most concentrated sense gratification is simply to give some pleasure to the tongue, to the eyes, to the ears, to the nose, to the flesh. That is the grossest form of sense gratification. And what people are willing to do for that. And on a more subtle level, there is profit, adoration, and distinction. For one's own good name and fame, because one enjoys being recognized, one enjoys being glorified, what people are willing to do. This is called concentrated sense gratification, where all the energy is based simply on this particular body and mind. When people's whole existence, their whole life revolves around giving pleasure to this body and mind. And most of the world is under this spell. What people do. Intoxication. Illicit sex. These things are rampant throughout the world. If you listen to the music of the West, that's all it sings about. Intoxication and sex. There's practically never another theme. Simply in the modes of passion and ignorance. Intoxication means ignorance. Illicit sex means rajaguna, passion. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, Jivera lalate je iti uti doi shishnodara parayana krishna nahi par. That the whole world is practically revolving around trying to satisfy one's desire to just speak all nonsense, to taste palatable foods, and to have sex. And then, through this process, one becomes infatuated in the mind, and then one needs so much recognition, respect, control. Krishna says, for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. You see, when a man becomes intoxicated by being honored, the slightest bit of dishonor, he becomes like a cobra that has been trampled upon. Just outraged. But then it is explained that there is more expanded forms of sense enjoyment. For instance, a sense enjoyment of enjoying what is mine. Janasya mohoya mahamameti. Rishabdev explains in the Bhagavatam that the great illusion is we are always thinking in terms of I and mine. So this body, this mind, is I. But then our desire to lord it over material nature continues to expand through the reasoning of mine, my family. Why do I love you? Because you're mine. My home. Why is this so important to me? Because it's mine. And then a little beyond that, my caste. Why are you so much responsible and loyal? Because it's mine. My nation. Nationalism, according to the Shastra, is simply a gross form of expanded sense enjoyment. It's still self-interest. I love this nation and I'm loyal to this nation because it's mine. But in my next birth, if I'm born in Pakistan, I'll be fighting against India because Pakistan is mine. It's not a question of what's truth, it's just a question of what's mine. And beyond that, even the humanitarians. Prabhupada explains even they are engaged in the process of extended sense enjoyment. I will help humanity because humanity is my race. But what about the cows and what about the goats and what about the sheep and what about the trees? A person who doesn't learn to be kind and considerate to all is simply on one level or another of sense gratification. And here we find Kamsa, how much love he had for his sister. It's really amazing. He was such a great ruler. He was a prince. He was about to take the kingdom. He had such royal opulence. And when his sister was married to Vasudeva, he helped arrange wonderful, wonderful, wonderful ceremony just to please his sister, just to make her happy. Why? Because it was his sister. Obviously, the more royal the ceremony would be, the more recognition he would have. That just see how my family can put on such a wonderful marriage. And after that, he volunteered by his own free will just to give his sister satisfaction that I will drive you to your new husband's village, kingdom. I will personally take the reins and drive you. He was accepting the position of a menial chauffeur just to satisfy his sister. And it is described in the Bhagavatam, he did it because his heart was overladen with affection. So because of his family relationship with her, he had so much affection for her. He wanted to please her so much. At least that's what he thought. And that's what everybody else thought too. But in due course of time, Krishna likes to reveal where we are really at. Was it really her that he was trying to please? The test was when that auspicious voice, of course he did not consider it very auspicious, but we understand it was very auspicious. It called out from the sky, Kamsa, you are a fool. Do you not know that the eighth son of your sister Devaki is going to be the cause of your death? And then we could understand Kamsa's real heart. He didn't care anything about his sister. He was affectionate toward her because it was for his sense enjoyment. He was only concerned with one thing, and that was his own sense enjoyment. Immediately, he transformed from an affectionate, humble husband who was trying just to make his sister happy on this in this very, very auspicious day. He turned into a tyrannical demon. He immediately grabbed her by the hair with his left hand, drew his sharp sword, and was about to cut off her head. You know, in America, according to the law officials, Many of them they call murder the family crime, because most murders are amongst family members. Familiarity breeds contempt. There's not so much difference between love and hate. They're both intense emotions. And the more intense you love somebody, the more when you turn against that person, it becomes hate. There's very little neutrality in these very, very vibrant feelings of the heart. It goes one way or the other. Men and women, husbands, wives, children, fathers. One of the biggest, most famous musical singers of America. He was from the ghetto. His family had no money. They were practically living in the streets when he was a young boy. And he just started singing in the streets. Gradually he got a job somewhere, another place. Pretty soon he was practically the biggest singer in America. And he was making millions and millions of dollars. His name and fame was spread everywhere. First thing he did is took his father out of the ghetto and got him a beautiful, beautiful house in Los Angeles, California, one of the richest suburbs, where he has butlers and maids and nice cars and chauffeurs and everything. And he was doing everything for his father. And one day they got in an argument, and his father pulled out a gun and shot his son and killed him. This just happened a few years ago. This is the nature of the so-called affection when it's based on our own sense enjoyment. So Kamsa is really exhibiting a tendency that is within all of our hearts. We don't even know what our reality of our ego is. Real love is selfless. Real love is in a mood of giving. But oftentimes, underlying this whole phenomena of so-called love and affection is simply because it's good for my self-interest to do it, I'll do it. We have even seen in spiritual circles, a person who actually loves his guru is willing to do anything, go anywhere for his guru. But we have seen people who have been chanting jai 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 to their guru, but when there's some pressure, either you give up your guru or you have to suffer, they turn against and try to destroy him. Why? Because ultimately, their own self-interest is the center and the heart of their whole existence. And this is the real problem in this world. Therefore, it is explained here in the Bhagavatam that one who is too much attached to sense enjoyment cannot be trusted. Cannot trust such a person that's too much attached to the bodily conception of life. Because for their own self-interest, God knows what they'll do if circumstances change. We can only truly trust one who is unmotivated, selfless, one who is not addicted to one's own self-interest. So, here, Vasudev is in a very, very difficult predicament. His wife, who's an innocent woman, is about to be decapitated by her own brother. And Kamsa was not an ordinary man. It is described by his penance and austerities, he had attained the strength of 10,000 elephants. And we find, a little later in the story, how not only was Kamsa willing to kill his own sister, but he took his own father, Ugrasena, and mercilessly threw him into prison. And later on, he actually had plans to kill his own father. This is not just some mythology.
This is real.
We also find more recently in the story of Aurangzeb, the great Mughal emperor. His father was the king, Shah Jahan. Huh? Srila Prabhupada tells a story about how there was a author who wrote a book. It was called Shah Jahan. And it's all about, the whole book describes the atrocities of King Aurangzeb. And the author was approached by his friend and said, "Why did you name it Shah Jahan? You should have named it Aurangzeb, because it's all about him." He says, "You don't understand." He said, "The whole meditation of the book is, although the father was in prison the whole time, everything I was talking about in regard to the atrocities of Aurangzeb, all the murderers, all the espionage, he killed his brothers, he was destroying temples, destroying deities, killing Hindus, just terrible things. His father was receiving news of all this, and he was suffering so terribly within the prison, thinking what his beloved son was doing. So this principle of acting in the most untrusting ways because of attachment to the body of senses is repeated throughout history. And of course, there are hundreds of millions of examples. When we speak about on the royal level of Kamsa, Aurangzeb, they were emperors. So they can go to such extremes. But in everyday family life, we don't read about them because it's not such a, they don't have the power to do things so magnificent as these demons. But the same principle is there. So poor Vasudev, he sees his beloved wife about to be killed. But Vasudev knows that this is the woman who is to give birth to God. Huh? So not only for his own wife, but also for the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna's advent to be carried through, Vasudev had a very, very special mission of stopping Kamsa from this atrocity. And here he's beginning to preach to Kamsa. And such wonderful philosophy he's about to speak. He's explaining to Kamsa that you are the pride of your family. These are the first words. He flatters him. Huh? You see, according to time and circumstance, you have to say in such a way that the person's going to listen. There's no use preaching if a person's not listening. It's a waste of words. The whole reason to preach is to change a person's heart. Not just to show somebody that you know the philosophy very nicely. Who cares if you know the philosophy very nicely? The philosophy is to change people's hearts. If your heart isn't changed, then the philosophy is utterly useless. It's just like if a doctor knows everything about the medicine, but he doesn't know how to give it to the patient. What is the use of that medicine? Huh? You know everything about all the chemical properties of a particular medicine, but you have no idea how to give it to the patient. That's like a preacher who doesn't know how to change a person's heart. You have to appeal to a person, first of all, to open his mind, open his ears, and open his heart. Then you speak the philosophy. The first thing is you have to gain their trust. And according to a particular person, you have to gain their trust in different ways. So Vasudeva was very expert. He knew that anyone who praised Kamsa would at least have some initial trust for that person. Because after all, if somebody's right, they can be trusted to some extent at least. And since Kamsa thought so much of himself, he thought he was so great, if Vasudeva was to praise him, Kamsa would think, "Oh, if this is right, if you're glorifying me, then what you say after that must also be right. You're on the right track. So the first thing Vasudeva did is he praised Kamsa. Actually, Srila Prabhupada explained that this is how you should preach to people. He says if a person is very proud and you want to tell him what he's doing wrong, he says this is the formula. First you say, my dear sir, you are very great. You are the pride of your family. You are very noble and you are very learned and you are a most respectable gentleman. And out of very, very high regard for you, I would like to tell you that you are a fool. By the time you get to telling him, he's already listening to you. He already accepts and trusts you. And yeah, I must be a fool. He was right about everything else, so he must be right about this. So Vasudeva is teaching us how to preach. The first words to Kamsa is, you are the pride of your family, the Bhoja dynasty, and great heroes praise your qualities. How could such a qualified person as you kill a woman, your own sister, especially on the occasion of her marriage? So the first thing is Vasudeva flatters him, but it wasn't just empty flattery, it was for a purpose. It was actually to help him and help others. So such flattery is good. It's not really flattery, it's a technique of glorification. And then, what is his next words? And then he appeals to him that you're such a qualified person. This is below you. You don't really mean that you're going to do that. I don't believe that you would do something like this. You're too great. You're too noble. You're too respectable. This is just some leela you're playing. But I can't take you seriously that you would do something like this because she's your own sister. It's her marriage. And you're such a qualified hero, the pride of your family. And what is his next words? Vira, he says. Oh, great hero. One who takes birth is sure to die. For death is born with the body. One may die today or after hundreds of years, but death is sure for every living entity. So here, Vasudeva begins his preaching. First, he addresses him as, O great hero, to open up Kamsa's ears, to open up his heart, to get his attention, because he knows what a proud man he is, and then he starts to preach. When the present body turns to dust and is again reduced to five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, the proprietor of the body, the living being, automatically receives another body of material elements according to his fruit of activities. When the next body is obtained, he gives up the present body. He's explaining to Kamsa that to try to avoid the inevitable, why should we ruin our name, our fame, and why should we incur such incredible future suffering upon ourselves? Death must come. And he's explaining to engage in such an atrocious, sinful activity just to save yourself from death is crazy, because you're going to have to die anyway. You're not this body. You are the eternal soul. The soul is constantly transmigrating from one body to another to another. And what will be your next destination? Consider that. What he's telling Kamsa, in essence, is that it is due to his attachment to the illusion of the bodily concept of life that so much bondage and ignorance is covering his soul. When, as a person traveling on the road, rests one foot on the ground and then lifts the other, or as a worm on a vegetable transfers itself to one leaf and then gives up the previous one, the conditioned soul takes shelter of another body and then gives up the one he had before. Having experienced the situation by seeing or hearing about it, one contemplates and speculates about that situation, and thus one surrenders to it, not considering his present body. Similarly, by mental adjustment, one dreams at night of living under different circumstances in different bodies and forgets his actual position. Under this same process, one gives up his present body and accepts another. Tata dehandara prapti. Is there any questions? Vasudev is speaking to Kamsa is this. As long as we're on the bodily concept of life, everything we do is selfish. To some extent. There are various degrees, that is for sure. Until we understand what the real self is, all of our relationships are an illusion. You see, what Vasudeva is telling Kamsa here is you're constantly changing your bodies. So what really is your relationship to these people around you? The same type of situation was there with Maharaj Chitraketu. He wanted a son very, very bad. He was longing for a son. And Angira Muni gave him a particular benediction by which he could have a son, but Angira Muni said, "I must tell you, I cannot interfere with your destiny, that this son will be the cause of great joy and lamentation, therefore name him Harshashoka." So the son was born, and he was so beautiful, and he was the cause of such joy to everyone. But one man's food is another man's poison, you know. He had many queens, and the queen that gave the birth to the son was getting so much attention by everybody, and the other queens were feeling themselves neglected. And although they were virtuous women, the same principle was there. You must understand, to be the queen of such a great soul as Maharaj Chitraketu is not an ordinary woman. But because they were being neglected, they became so envious of his primary queen that they poisoned the baby. They couldn't tolerate. They didn't care. They didn't care that the king was happy. They were concerned that they were not getting the happiness they wanted. Previously, they were very nicely serving the king. They were doing everything for his pleasure. But when he was really experiencing the ultimate pleasure of his life of enjoying a son, they were very much disturbed because it was from another woman. So they came together and conspired to poison the child. And then Maharaj Chitraketu, it was like the end of the world. It was total devastation. How he was suffering. And then it is explained that he was suffering so bad he couldn't even rule the kingdom anymore. He was in so much separation. And then what happened is Angira Muni and Narada Muni came back. And when they saw his condition, he simply wanted his son back. So they brought his son back to life. He came back. And when he came back, the son began to speak. And Maharaj Chitraketu was so happy, "Oh, my son, you have returned." And this young boy, Harshashoka, he was just a baby, he began to speak. He said, "Oh, You say you are my father? Which father?
I've had millions of fathers through millions of births. This soul has been transmigrating from place to place to place. Which father are you?
My fathers are so significant that of all the millions in the past, I don't even remember a single one of them.
He said, my soul has a destination to be with God. Why are you interrupting me? Why are you interrupting my progress?
And upon hearing the words of his son, Maharaj Chichiketu actually became self-realized. He actually felt joy that his son, the soul of his son, was going back to Godhead. Huh? And in this way, he became an enlightened sage. So who is it that we really love? As long as we're on the bodily concept, our so-called love is either a concentrated or extended form of sense enjoyment. It's not until we understand what our relationship is with Krishna and the eternal nature of the soul that we could truly love anyone. Then how much immense, unlimited love we have for our family members and everybody else. Who is a more loving son than Prahlad? Although he totally disobeyed his father wanted him to be a crooked thief and a demon. But Prahlad wanted to be a nice devotee. But Prahlad knew, if I become like my father, I'm just going to further incriminate my father in his sinful activities and we're both going to go to hell. But if I become a devotee, not only will I be liberated, but he will be liberated. It was his love for his father. And even though his father tried to kill him, he wasn't concerned with his own body. Let him kill this body. And my father, the benediction that he asked for Lord Nrsingadev was not to get revenge on his father, but to liberate his father. That's love. That's love for the soul, love for the real person. And of course, care for the body is automatically there. If you love the soul, you'll care for every part of the soul. If you love a person's soul, Srila Prabhupada, what was the nature of his love? Because he loved the souls of people. He was so concerned with every part of them. It's not that he was callous to the body. He was more attentive to the body than the average parent. But it was based on reality, not illusion. I was with one of his very intimate disciples. His name was Bhagavat. And Bhagavat was telling me such a striking realization that he once had of Prabhupada. Is it was in Mayapur during the Gaur Purnima festival where thousands of devotees and guests from all over the world came for this annual festival just to be with Prabhupada. And in the morning they were having the Guru Puja where Prabhupada was sitting on a beautiful big marble Vyasasan that he was given and he sat on just as a humble representative of God. And a humble representative of his own spiritual master. And there were thousands of people offering arti to him, chanting, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, dancing, tears flowing from their eyes upon seeing him after long separation, offering him garlands, offering him so much of their love. They were worshipping him with their hearts and souls. And everyone was coming up to give him, to offer flowers at his lotus feet. So Bhagavat came up to offer flowers and he had a bandage on his foot. And meanwhile were all of these people, sannyasis all around, chanting, dancing, thousands of grihasthas, hundreds of brahmacharis, everyone. The focus of everything was simply Prabhupada's glorification. And Prabhupada, he called Bhagavat over and he said, what's wrong with your foot? He said, I stepped on something and it got infected. He said, oh, it got in. You have to take care of it. You know, here in India, for you Americans, if you get an infection, it will be very hard for you to ever cure it. He said, do you have proper medication? He said, no, I don't, Prabhupada. So Prabhupada reached in his bag and took out
so many rupees and said, here, you get this particular medicine for it. He gave him the rupees. So while everybody's worshipping Prabhupada's lotus feet, his only concern is the injured foot of one of his disciples. Prabhupada was very careful in this way. If you love somebody, you don't ignore the body of that person. You're caring for every aspect of that person. It's not that you ignore the feelings of that person. Prabhupada, when the need was there, he would chastise. But I have never seen anyone in all of my life who could encourage people more than him. He would say whatever was needed to make you feel that, yes, I want to love Krishna. He was the perfect servant to soothe the mind, to help the body. Why? Because he truly loved the soul. Therefore, his love for every aspect of you was real love. It was true love because it was based on truth. And that is the type of love, that is the type of love that this world is craving for. And there's so much physical and mental love, and people are frustrated. Spiritual love automatically includes every other type of love. So the real concern is, how could I best help my beloved come closer to God? That is love for the body, the mind, and the soul. Is there any other questions? Yes? Why did they have to suffer? Krishna wanted to show the qualifications of one in whom he appears. Krishna's advent is not only historically significant, but it's also very symbolically significant, in the sense that the purpose of life is for Krishna to appear within our own hearts. We want Krishna to advent within our own hearts, to reveal himself to us. Now, what are the qualifications that are required to be a part of this divine lila of witnessing Krishna's appearance, to become like Devaki and Vasudev? Devaki and Vasudev were not just ordinary people. It's not that they were having children because they could not control their senses. Sometimes, you know, here in India, there's all this debate about family planning. Why is there all this debate about family planning? Because people cannot control their senses. They're not willing to control their senses. They get an urge, they can't control it, and then what are the consequences? Either they have to have an unwanted child, and they have no means of supporting it, or they have to murder it through abortion, or they have to do all sorts of unnatural things to their body and to this poor little atma that's coming through contraceptives. We're not going to discuss the details of this because it's a long subject matter. But there's all types of arguments of what is the best thing to do, what is the moral thing to do. Should we have it and neglect it? Should we kill it? Or should we poison it with all sorts of contraceptive methods and probably get cancer ourselves or some disorder? Our next child will be deformed. There's all sorts of problems with contraceptives. What is the problem due to? Uncontrolled senses. If you don't want a child, don't have sex. It's as easy as that. Do you think Vasudev and Devaki were like these people who couldn't control their senses? They were of the highest order. They were way beyond the gross senses of the body. So why did they come together to have a child every year while living in the prison when they knew how much a mother becomes attached to the child? That child's living in her womb for 9 months. She's feeding it, she's nursing it, and then when it comes out and she sees it, for you women who have had children, what is the feeling after you give birth when you first see the child that you were nourishing within your womb for all those months, when you first see it? There's such an incredibly intense affection for that child. It's natural.